Chapter 5. The Way to a Fortunate Rebirth. Introduction. In his account of his noble quest, the Buddha says that when he gazed out upon the world soon after his enlightenment, he saw that sentient beings are like lotus flowers at various stages of growth within a pond. See page 71. While some beings are like lotuses at or near the surface of the pond, capable of awakening merely by being exposed to his world-transcending teachings, the vast majority of people who encounter the Dhamma are like lotuses growing deep below the surface. These lotuses benefit from the sunlight and use its energy to sustain their life, yet still need time to reach the surface and blossom. So too, the great multitude of people who hear the Buddha's teachings and establish faith must still nurture their wholesome qualities with the radiant energy of the Dhamma before their mind streams become mature enough to attain direct realization. This process ordinarily requires many lives, and thus such people have to take a long-term approach to their spiritual development. While practicing the way to liberation, they must avoid a rebirth in the unfortunate realms and win successive rebirths blessed with material security, happiness, and opportunities for further spiritual progress. These benefits, the enhancing conditions for spiritual development in the Dhamma, come about by the acquisition of punya, or merit, a word that signifies the capacity of wholesome action to yield beneficial results within the cycle of rebirths. According to the Buddha's teaching, the cosmos, with its many realms of sentient existence, is governed at all levels by immutable laws, physical, biological, psychological, and ethical. The process by which sentient beings migrate from one state of existence to another is likewise lawful. It is regulated by a law that works in two principal ways. First, it connects our actions with a particular realm of rebirth that corresponds to our actions. And second, it determines the relations between our actions and the quality of our experience within the particular realm into which we have been reborn. The governing factor in this process, the factor that makes the entire process a lawful one, is a force called kama, Sanskrit, karma. The word kama literally means action, but technically it refers to volitional action. As the Buddha says, it is volitional, sitana, that I call kama. For having willed, sitayitva, one acts by body, speech, and mind. Kama thus denotes deeds that originate from volition. Such volition may remain purely mental, generating mental kama that occurs as thoughts, plans, and desires, or it may come to expression outwardly through manifest bodily and verbal actions. It may seem that our deeds, once performed, perish and vanish without leaving behind any traces apart from their visible impact on other people and our environment. However, according to the Buddha, all morally determinate volitional actions create a potential to bring forth results, vipaka, or fruits, phala, that correspond to the ethical quality of those actions. This capacity of our deeds to produce the morally appropriate results is what is meant by kama. Our deeds generate kama, a potential to produce fruits that correspond to their own intrinsic tendencies. Then, when internal and external conditions are suitable, the kama ripens and produces the appropriate fruits. In ripening, the kama rebounds upon us for good or for harm, depending on the moral quality of the original action. This may happen either later in the same life in which the action was done, in the next life, or in some distant future life. The one thing that is certain is that as long as we remain within samsara, any stored up kama of ours will be capable of ripening so long as it has not yet produced its due results. On the basis of its ethical quality, the Buddha distinguishes kama into two major categories, the unwholesome, akusala, and the wholesome, kusala. Unwholesome kama is action that is spiritually detrimental to the agent, morally reprehensible, and potentially productive in an unfortunate rebirth and painful results. The criterion for judging an action to be unwholesome is its underlying motives, the roots from which it springs. There are three unwholesome roots: greed, hatred, and delusion. From these, there arises a wide variety of secondary defilements, states such as anger, hostility, envy, selfishness, arrogance, pride, presumption, and laziness. And from the root defilements and secondary defilements arise defiled actions. Wholesome kama, on the other hand, is action that is spiritually beneficial and morally commendable. It is action that ripens in happiness and good fortune. Its underlying motives are the three wholesome roots: non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, which may be expressed more positively as generosity, loving-kindness, and wisdom. Whereas actions springing from the unwholesome roots are necessarily bound to the world of repeated birth and death, actions springing from the wholesome roots may be of two kinds: mundane and world-transcending. The mundane, lokiya, wholesome actions have the potential to produce a fortunate rebirth and pleasant results within the round of rebirths. The world-transcending or supra-mundane, lokuttara, wholesome actions, namely the kama generated by developing the Noble Eightfold Path and the other aids to enlightenment, lead to enlightenment and to liberation from the round of rebirths. This is the kama that dismantles the entire process of karmic causation. The correlation between kama and its results is indicated in a general way in text 5.1.1. This sutta refers to unwholesome action as dark kama and mundane wholesome action as bright kama. It also refers to a type of kama that is both dark and bright. Strictly speaking, this does not denote a single action that simultaneously partakes of both unwholesome and wholesome characteristics. Technically, such a thing is impossible, for an action must be one or the other. The combined kama refers to the conduct of a person who intermittently engages in both unwholesome and wholesome behavior. Finally, the sutta speaks of a fourth type of kama that is neither dark nor bright. This is the action of developing the Noble Eightfold Path, the wholesome world-transcending kama. It cannot be emphasized strongly enough that for early Buddhism, an understanding and acceptance of this principle of kama and its fruit is an essential component of right view. Right view has two aspects: the world-bound or mundane aspect, which pertains to life within the world, and the supramundane or world-transcending aspect, which pertains to the path of liberation. The world-transcending right view includes an understanding of the Four Noble Truths, dependent origination, and the three marks of impermanence, suffering, and non-self. For early Buddhism, this world-transcending right view cannot be taken up in isolation from mundane right view. Rather, it presupposes and depends upon the sound support of mundane right view, which means a firm conviction in the validity of the law of kama and its unfolding through the process of rebirths. To accept the law of kama entails a radical transformation in our understanding of our relationship to the world. The twin doctrines of kama and rebirth enable us to see that the world in which we live is, in important respects, an external reflection of the internal cosmos of the mind. This does not mean that the external world can be reduced to a mental projection in the way proposed by certain types of philosophical idealism. However, taken in conjunction, these two doctrines do show that the conditions under which we live closely correspond to the karmic tendencies of our minds. The reason why a living being is reborn into a particular realm is because in a previous life that being has generated the kama, or volitional action, that leads to rebirth into that realm. Thus, in the final analysis, all the realms of existence have been formed, fashioned, and sustained by the mental activity of living beings. As the Buddha says, for beings obstructed by ignorance and hindered by craving, kama is the field, consciousness the seed, and craving the moisture, for consciousness to be established in a new realm of existence, either inferior, middling, or superior. Anguttara Nikaya 3.76, 1, 223. The next selection, text 5, 1, 2, draws a finer distinction among the types of unwholesome and wholesome kama. The text enumerates 10 primary instances of each class. Here they are called respectively unrighteous conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, and righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. But they are usually known as the 10 pathways of unwholesome and wholesome kama. The 10 are subdivided by way of the 3 doors of action, body, speech, and mind. Taking the unwholesome first, there are 3 kinds of bodily misconduct: killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. 4 kinds of verbal misconduct: lying, malicious speech, harsh speech, and idle chatter or gossip. And 3 kinds of mental misconduct: covetousness, ill will, and wrong view. The 10 courses of wholesome action are their exact opposites: abstinence from the 3 kinds of bodily misconduct, abstinence from the 4 kinds of verbal misconduct, and non-covetousness, goodwill, and right view. According to the sutta, the 10 types of unwholesome kama are the reason that beings are reborn in the bad destinations after death. The 10 types of wholesome kama are the reason that beings are reborn in the good destinations after death. As the sutta shows, the 10 types of wholesome kama are the support, not only for a heavenly rebirth, but also for the destruction of the taints, the attainment of liberation. The concluding paragraphs of this sutta give us a brief survey of Buddhist cosmology. The Buddhist cosmos is divided into 3 broad realms: the sense sphere realm, Kamadhatu, the form realm, Rupadhatu, and the formless realm, Arupadhatu, each comprising a range of subsidiary planes. The sense sphere realm, our realm, is so called because the beings reborn here are strongly driven by sensual desire. The realm is divided into 2 levels, the bad destinations and the good destinations. The bad destinations, or states of misery, apaya, are 3 in number. The hells, states of intense torment, see Majjhima Nikaya 129 and 130, not included in this anthology. The animal kingdom, and the sphere of spirits, Peti Visaya, being afflicted with incessant hunger, thirst, and other sufferings. These are the realms of retribution for the 10 unwholesome paths of kama. The good destinations in the sense sphere realm are the human world and the 6 sensual heavenly planes. The latter are the devas in the heaven of the 4 great kings, who are presided over by 4 powerful devas, namely the 4 great kings. The Tavatisma devas, presided over by Sakka, a devotee of the Buddha who is faithful but prone to negligence. See the Sakka Samyutta, Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 11. The Yama devas, the devas of the Tusita heaven, the abode of a bodhisatta before his final birth. The Nimanarati devas, the gods who delight in creating. And the Parani Mita Vasavati devas, the gods who control what is created by others. The karmic cause for rebirth into the good destinations of the sense sphere realm is the practice of the 10 courses of wholesome action. In the form realm, the grosser types of material form are absent. Its denizens, known as Brahmas, enjoy bliss, power, luminosity, and vitality far superior to the beings in the sense sphere realm. The form realm consists of 16 planes. These are the objective counterparts of the 4 jhanas. Attainment of the first jhana leads to rebirth among Brahma's assembly, the ministers of Brahma, and the Mahabrahmas, according to whether it is developed to an inferior, middling, or superior degree. The second jhana, attained in the same 3 degrees, leads respectively to rebirth among the devas of limited radiance, of measureless radiance, and of streaming radiance. The third jhana, attained in the same 3 degrees, leads respectively to rebirth among the devas of limited glory, of measureless glory, and of refulgent glory. The fourth jhana ordinarily leads to rebirth among the devas of great fruit. But if developed with a feeling of disgust for perception, It will conduce to rebirth among the non-percipient beings, beings who lack perception. The form realm also comprises five planes reserved exclusively for the rebirth of non-returners. See pages 379 through 380. Called the Pure Abodes, Aviha, Atapa, Sudasa, Sudasi, and Akanita. In each of the subtle form planes, the lifespan is said to be of enormous duration and to increase significantly with each higher plane. In the third realm of existence, material form is non-existent and bare mental processes exist. Hence, it is called the formless realm. This realm consists of four planes, which are the objective counterparts of the four formless meditative attainments, after which they are named. The base of the infinity of space, the base of the infinity of consciousness, the base of nothingness, and the base of neither perception nor non-perception. The lifespans ascribed to these realms are respectively 20,000, 40,000, 60,000, and 84,000 great eons. For the duration of one eon, see text 1.4.3. For Buddhist cosmology, existence in every realm, being the product of a kama with a finite potency, is necessarily impermanent. Beings take rebirth into a realm appropriate for their kama or deeds, experience the good or bad results, and then, when the generative kama has spent its force, they pass away to take rebirth elsewhere as determined by still another kama that has found the opportunity to ripen. Hence, the torments of hell as well as the joys of heaven, no matter how long they may last, are bound to pass. The Buddha guides those whose spiritual faculties are still tender to aspire for a human or heavenly rebirth, and teaches them the lines of conduct that conduce to the fulfillment of their aspirations. But he urges those with mature faculties to make a determined effort to put an end to the aimless wandering of samsara and reach the deathless, nibbana, which transcends all conditioned planes of being. While the first two texts in this chapter establish a general correlation between kama and spheres of rebirth, text 5.1.3 specifies the underlying karmic causes for the manifest differences in human life. It does so with reference to a well-known saying of the Buddha: beings are owners of their kama, heirs of their kama. They originate from their kama, are bound to their kama, have their kama as their refuge. It is kama that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. The sutta proposes to explain this statement with regard to seven pairs of contrasting qualities observed among people. This text also introduces a distinction between two types of consequences that an unwholesome kama can have. The more powerful is rebirth in a bad destination. The other is unpleasant fruits within the human state. For example, a short lifespan for one who in an earlier life killed living beings. An analogous distinction obtains among the consequences that a wholesome kama can have. The more powerful is rebirth in a heavenly world. The other is pleasant fruits within the human state. The next section deals with merit, punya, wholesome kama capable of yielding favorable results within the cycle of rebirths. Merit produces mundane benefits, such as a good rebirth, wealth, beauty, and success. It also serves as an enhancing condition for supramundane benefits, that is, for attaining the stages along the path to enlightenment. Hence, as seen in text 5.2.1, the Buddha urges his disciples to cultivate merit, referring to his own cultivation of merit over many previous lives as an example. The Nikayas concisely organize the types of merit into three bases of meritorious deeds. Punya kiriyavatu, giving, moral discipline, and meditation. Text 5.2.2 connects the basis of merit with the types of rebirth to which they lead. In the Indian religious context, the practice of meritorious deeds revolves around faith in certain objects regarded as sacred and spiritually empowering, capable of serving as a support for the acquisition of merit. For followers of the Buddha's teaching, these are the three jewels: the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Text 5.2.3 extols these as each supreme in its particular sphere. the Buddha is supreme among persons, the Dhamma among teachings, and the Sangha among religious communities. The text proposes an interesting twofold distinction of the Dhamma jewel. Among all conditioned things, Dhamma Sanghata, the Noble Eightfold Path is supreme. Among all things conditioned or unconditioned, Dhamma Sanghata va Asanghata va. Nibbana is supreme. Merely having confidence in the three jewels, that is, reverential trust and devotion toward them, is itself a basis of merit. But as the verses attached to the sutta make clear, the Buddha and the Sangha additionally function as the recipients of gifts. And in this role, they further enable donors to acquire merit leading to the fulfillment of their virtuous wishes. More will be said about this aspect of merit just below. The following sections of this chapter elaborate on the three bases of merit individually, beginning in section 3 with giving or generosity, dana. The Buddha often treated giving as the most rudimentary virtue of the spiritual life, for giving serves to break down the egocentric frame of mind on the basis of which we habitually interact with others. Contrary to what a Western reader might expect, however, giving, for early Buddhism, does not mean simply philanthropic charity directed toward the poor and disadvantaged. While it includes this, the practice of giving has a more context-specific meaning rooted in the social structure of Indian religiosity. In India, during the Buddha's time, those who sought to fathom the deepest truths of existence and attain release from the round of birth and death usually renounced home and family, relinquished their secure place in the cohesive Indian social order, and adopted the precarious life of the homeless wanderer. With shaved heads or matted locks, clad in ochre or white robes, or going naked, they would move from place to place without fixed abode, except during the 3 months of the rainy season, when they would settle in simple huts, caves, or other lodgings. Such homeless wanderers, known as samanas, ascetics, or paribhajakas, wanderers, did not perform any remunerative services, but depended upon the charity of householders for their livelihood. The lay devotees provided them with their material requisites, robes, food, lodgings, and medicines. Doing so in the confidence that such services were a source of merit that would help them advance a few steps farther in the direction of final emancipation. When the Buddha appeared on the scene, he adopted this mode of life for himself. Once he commenced his work as a spiritual teacher, he established his Sangha on the same principle. The bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, the monks and nuns, would depend on the charity of others for their material support, and they would reciprocate by offering their donors the more precious gift of the Dhamma, the teaching of the lofty path that leads to happiness, peace, and final liberation. Text 5, 3, 5 testifies to this principle of mutual support. By accepting the gifts of lay people, the monastics give them the opportunity to acquire merit. Since the volume of merit generated by the act of giving is considered to be proportional to the worthiness of the recipient, when the recipients are the Buddha and those following in his footsteps, the merit becomes immeasurable. See Majjhima Nikaya 142, not included in this anthology. For this reason, the Savaka Sangha, the spiritual community of noble disciples, is called the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Anuttaram Punya Ketam Lokasa. Gifts to the Sangha, it is said, conduce to great blessings. They lead to one's welfare and happiness for a long time and can bring rebirth in the heavenly worlds. But as text 5.3.6 reminds us, this is true only for the morally pure, not for the immoral. This leads to the next base of merit, moral discipline, sila, which for early Buddhism requires the undertaking of precepts. The most basic moral guidelines inculcated in the Nikayas are the five precepts, the training rules to abstain from taking life, stealing, sexual misconduct, false speech, and the use of intoxicants. These are mentioned in text 5.4.1, which, by an interesting twist in terminology, speaks of them as pristine, traditional, ancient gifts, thus implicitly subsuming sila under dana. The reason the observance of precepts is a form of giving is because one who undertakes precepts will be giving to immeasurable beings freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. And as a karmic consequence, he himself will enjoy immeasurable freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. While the Buddha enjoins observance of the five precepts upon lay followers as a full-time obligation, he recommends a more stringent type of formal practice for the Uposatha, the observance days determined by the lunar calendar. The full moon day, the new moon day, and the two half moon days. Of the four, in Buddhist countries, today it is the full moon day that is given priority. On these occasions, devout lay Buddhists undertake eight precepts, the usual five, but with the third changed to complete sexual abstinence, augmented by three other precepts that emulate the training rules of a novice monk or nun. The eight precepts, enumerated in text 5, 4, 2, augment the training in sila as a moral observance with a training in self-restraint, simplicity, and contentment. In this respect, they prepare the disciple for the training of the mind undertaken in the practice of meditation, the third base of merit. The practice of meditation is not only the heart of the path to liberation, but a source of merit in its own right. Wholesome meditation practices, even those that do not directly lead to insight, help to purify the grosser levels of mental defilement and uncover deeper dimensions of the mind's potential purity and radiance. Text 551 declares that the type of meditation that is most fruitful for the production of mundane merit is the development of loving kindness, metta bhavana. The practice of loving kindness, however, is only one among a set of four meditations called the Divine Abodes, Brahma Vihara, or Immeasurable States, Appamanya. The development of loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity, which are to be extended boundlessly to all sentient beings. Briefly, loving kindness, metta, is the wish for the welfare and happiness of all beings. Compassion, karuna, the feeling of empathy for all those afflicted with suffering. Altruistic joy, mudita, the feeling of happiness at the success and good fortune of others. And equanimity, upekkha, a balanced reaction to joy and misery, which protects one from emotional agitation. These meditations are said to be the means to rebirth in the Brahma world. See text 552. While the Brahmins regarded the Brahma world as the highest attainment, for the Buddha, it was just one exalted sphere of rebirth. The concentration arisen from these meditations, however, can also be used as a basis for cultivating the wisdom of insight, and insight culminates in liberation. Text 553, the last selection of this chapter, thus grades the different types of merit according to their fruits, from giving, with the various kinds of gifts ranked according to the spiritual status of the recipients, through the going for refuge and the five precepts, to the meditation on loving kindness. Then, at the very end, it declares that the most fruitful deed among them all is the perception of impermanence. The perception of impermanence, however, belongs to a different order. It is so fruitful not because it yields pleasant mundane results within the round of rebirths, but because it leads to the wisdom of insight that cuts the chains of bondage and brings the realization of complete emancipation, Nibbana. Chapter 5. The Way to a Fortunate Rebirth. Part 1. The Law of Kama. Verse 1. Four Kinds of Kama. There are, O monks, these four kinds of kama, declared by me after I had realized them for myself by direct knowledge. What for? There is dark kama, with dark results. There is bright kama, with bright results. There is kama that is dark and bright, with dark and bright results. There is kama that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results. Which leads to the destruction of kama? And what, monks? Is dark kama with dark results? Here, monks, someone generates an afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in an afflictive world. when he is reborn in an afflictive world. Afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by afflictive contacts, he experiences an afflictive feeling, extremely painful, as, for example, the beings in hell experience. This is called dark kama with dark results. And what, monks, is bright kama with bright results? Here, monks, someone generates a non-afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in a non-afflictive world. When he is reborn in a non-afflictive world, non-afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by non-afflictive contacts, he experiences a non-afflictive feeling, extremely pleasant, as, for example, the devas of refulgent glory experience. This is called bright kama with bright results. And what, monks, is dark and bright kama with dark and bright results? Here, monks, someone generates both an afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind, and a non-afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in a world that is both afflictive and non-afflictive. When he is reborn in such a world, both afflictive and non-afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by such contacts, he experiences both an afflictive feeling and a non-afflictive feeling, a mixture and conglomeration of pleasure and pain. As, for example, human beings and some devas and some beings in the lower world experience. This is called dark and bright kama, with dark and bright results. And what, monks, is kama that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the destruction of kama? The volition to abandon this dark kama with dark results, and to abandon the bright kama with bright results, and to abandon the dark and bright kama with dark and bright results. This is called the kama that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the destruction of kama. These, monks, are the four kinds of kama declared by me after I had realized them for myself by direct knowledge. Anguttara Nikaya, 4, 232. 2. 230 through 232. Verse 2. Why beings fare as they do after death? 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was wandering by stages in the Kosalan country with a large sangha of monks, and eventually he arrived at a Kosalan Brahmin village named Sala. 2. The Brahmin householders of Sala heard. It is said that the ascetic Gotama, a Sakyan son who went forth from a Sakyan clan, has been wandering in the Kosalan country with a large sangha of monks and has come to Sala. Now a good report of Master Gotama has been circulating thus, that Blessed One is an Arahant, as in text 3.2, that is perfectly complete and purified. Now it is good to see such Arahants. 3. Then the Brahmin householders of Sala went to the Blessed One. Some paid homage to him and sat down to one side. Some exchanged greetings with him and, after their greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. Some saluted him reverentially and sat down to one side. Some remained silent and sat down to one side. 4. When they were seated, they said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, what is the cause and condition why some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell? And what is the cause and condition why some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world? 5. Householders, it is by reason of unrighteous conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. It is by reason of righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. 6. We do not understand the detailed meaning of Master Gotama's statement, which he has spoken in brief without expounding the detailed meaning. It would be good if Master Gotama would teach us the Dhamma so that we might understand the detailed meaning of his statement. Then, householders, listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, Venerable Sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this. 7. Householders, there are three kinds of unrighteous bodily conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. There are four kinds of unrighteous verbal conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. There are three kinds of unrighteous mental conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. 8. And now, householders, are there three kinds of unrighteous bodily conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone kills living beings. He is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. He takes what is not given. He takes by way of theft the wealth and property of others in the village or forest. He commits sexual misconduct. He has intercourse with women who are protected by their mother, father, mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives, who have a husband, who are protected by law, and even with those already engaged. That is how there are three kinds of unrighteous bodily conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. 9. And how, householders, are there four kinds of unrighteous verbal conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma? Here someone speaks falsehood. When summoned to a court, or to a meeting, or to his relative's presence, or to his guild, or to the royal family's presence, and questioned as a witness thus, "So, good man, tell what you know." Not knowing, he says, "I know," or knowing, he says, "I do not know." Not seeing, he says, "I see," or seeing, he says, "I do not see." In full awareness, he speaks falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. He speaks maliciously. He repeats elsewhere what he has heard here, in order to divide those people from these, or he repeats to these people what he has heard elsewhere, in order to divide these people from those. Thus, he is one who divides those who are united, a creator of divisions, who enjoys discord, rejoices in discord, delights in discord, a speaker of words that create discord. He speaks harshly. He utters such words as are rough, hard, hurtful to others, offensive to others, bordering on anger, not conducive to concentration. He engages in idle chatter. He speaks at the wrong time, speaks what is not fact, speaks what is useless, speaks contrary to the Dhamma and the discipline. At the wrong time, he speaks such words as are worthless, unreasonable, immoderate, and unbeneficial. This is how there are four kinds of unrighteous verbal conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. 10. And how, householders, are there three kinds of unrighteous mental conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone is covetous. He covets the wealth and property of those thus, "Oh, may what belongs to another be mine." Or he has a mind of ill will and intentions of hate thus, "May these beings be slain and slaughtered. May they be cut off, perish, or be annihilated." Or he has wrong view, distorted vision thus, "There is nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed. No fruit or result of good and bad actions. No this world, no other world. No mother, no father. No beings who are reborn spontaneously. No good and virtuous ascetics and Brahmins in the world who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world." That is how there are three kinds of unrighteous mental conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. So, householders, it is by reason of such unrighteous conduct, such conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. 11. Householders, there are three kinds of righteous bodily conduct. Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. There are four kinds of righteous verbal conduct. Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. There are three kinds of righteous mental conduct. Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 12. And how, householders, are there three kinds of righteous bodily conduct? Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. Here, someone abandoning the destruction of life abstains from the destruction of life. With rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful, he dwells compassionate to all living beings, abandoning the taking of what is not given. He abstains from taking what is not given. He does not take by way of theft the wealth and property of others in the village or in the forest. Abandoning sexual misconduct, he abstains from sexual misconduct. He does not have intercourse with women who are protected by their mother, father, mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives who have a husband who are protected by law, or with those already engaged. That is how there are three kinds of righteous bodily conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 13. And how, householders, are there four kinds of righteous verbal conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone abandoning false speech abstains from false speech when summoned to a court or to a meeting or to his relative's presence or to his guild or to the royal family's presence and questioned as a witness thus, "So, good man, tell what you know." Not knowing, he says, "I do not know." Or knowing, he says, "I know." Not seeing, he says, "I do not see." Or seeing, he says, "I see." He does not in full awareness speak falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. Abandoning malicious speech, he abstains from malicious speech. He does not repeat elsewhere what he has heard here in order to divide those people from these, nor does he repeat to these people what he has heard elsewhere in order to divide these people from those. Thus, he is one who reunites those who are divided, a promoter of friendships, who enjoys concord, rejoices in concord, delights in concord, a speaker of words that promote concord. Abandoning harsh speech, he abstains from harsh speech. He speaks such words as are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many, and agreeable to many. Abandoning idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. He speaks at the right time, speaks what is fact, speaks on what is good, speaks on the Dhamma and the discipline. At the right time, he speaks such words as are worth recording, reasonable, moderate, and beneficial. That is how there are four kinds of righteous verbal conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 14. And how, householders, are there three kinds of righteous mental conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone is not covetous. He does not covet the wealth and property of others thus, "Oh, may what belongs to another be mine." His mind is without ill will, and he has intentions free from hate thus, "May these beings be free from enmity, affliction, and anxiety. May they live happily." He has right view, undistorted vision thus, "There is what is given and what is offered and what is sacrificed. There is fruit and result of good and bad actions. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are beings who are reborn spontaneously. There are good and virtuous ascetics and Brahmins in the world who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world." That is how there are three kinds of righteous mental conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. So, householders, it is by reason of such righteous conduct, such conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a good destination, even in a heavenly world. 15. If, householders, one who observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, should wish, "Oh, that on the breakup of the body, after death, may I be reborn in the company of well-to-do nobles," it is possible that, on the breakup of the body, after death, He will be reborn in the company of well-to-do nobles. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 16-17. If, householders, one who observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, should wish, "Oh, that on the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn in the company of well-to-do Brahmins, in the company of well-to-do householders," it is possible that, on the breakup of the body, after death, he will be reborn in the company of well-to-do householders. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 18-42. If, householders, one who observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, should wish, "Oh, that on the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn in the company of the devas of the realm of the four great kings, in the company of the Tavatimsa devas, the Yama devas, the Tusita devas, the devas who delight in creating, the devas who wield power over others' creations, the devas of Brahma's company, the devas of radiance, the devas of limited radiance, the devas of immeasurable radiance, the devas of streaming radiance, the devas of glory, the devas of limited glory, the devas of immeasurable glory, the devas of refulgent glory, the devas of great fruit, the Aviha devas, the Atapa devas, the Sudasa devas, the Sudasi devas, the Akanitha devas, the devas of the base of the infinity of space, the devas of the base of the infinity of consciousness, the devas of the base of nothingness, the devas of the base of neither perception nor non-perception. It is possible that on the breakup of the body, after death, he will be reborn in the company of the devas of the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 43. If, householders, one who observes conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct, should wish, "Oh, by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge, may I, in this very life, enter upon and dwell in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom that is taintless with the destruction of the taints." It is possible that by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this very life he will enter upon and dwell in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 44. When this was said, the Brahmin householders of Sala said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Master Gotama, magnificent Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the darkness so that those with good eyesight can see forms. We now go for refuge to Master Gotama, to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of monks. Let Master Gotama accept us as lay followers who have gone for refuge from today until life's end." Majhima Nikaya, 41. Salayaka Sutta, 1, 286-290. Verse 3. Kama and its fruits. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. 2. Then the Brahmin student Subha, Todaya's son, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and asked the Blessed One. 3. Master Gotama, why is it that human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? For people are seen to be short-lived and long-lived, sickly and healthy, ugly and beautiful, without influence and influential, poor and wealthy, low-born and high-born, stupid and wise. Why is it, Master Gotama, that human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? 4. Student, beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, are bound to their actions, have their actions as their refuge. It is action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. I do not understand in detail the meaning of Master Gotama's statement, which he spoke in brief without expounding the meaning in detail. It would be good if Master Gotama would teach me the Dhamma, so that I might understand in detail the meaning of his statement. Then, student, listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, sir, Subha replied. The Blessed One said this. 5. Here, student, some man or woman kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the breakup of the body, after death, he is reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. But if on the breakup of the body, after death, he is not reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is short-lived. This is the way, student, that leads to short life. Namely, one kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. 6. But here, student, some man or woman, abandoning the destruction of life, abstains from the destruction of life, with rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful. He dwells compassionate to all living beings. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the breakup of the body, after death, he is reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. But if on the breakup of the body, after death, he is not reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is long-lived. This is the way, student, that leads to long life. Namely, abandoning the destruction of life. One abstains from the destruction of life, with rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful. One dwells compassionate to all living beings.